Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Welcome to another episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. This is your host, Michael W. Dean, and today our guest is Paul Rosenberg, a writer of books and writer for LouRockwell.com, and runs a company called Crypto Hippie that is a VPN and many, many other things, and he's just an all-around smart guy with a lot of good ideas. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm well, Michael. Thank you.
Cool. What's on your mind these days?
Oh, boy.
Or do you want to start with, let's start with what you do that I didn't cover, because I just gave the thumbnail. So who are you and what do you do?
Oh, gosh. I do a lot of things. One, like you mentioned, is that I run Crypto Hippie, which is essentially an internet privacy service, an anonymity service. I write a newsletter called Free Man's Perspective. Let's see, my background is actually in the construction business, and every now and then I do a little bit of expert work for that business, and I write books.
What are the names of some of your books, and what are they about?
Oh, gosh. Well, I wrote lots and lots and lots of engineering books over time. Also, the one that your listeners would probably know most is called A Lodging of Wayfaring Men. It's a novel that I wrote several years ago.
Cool. We have a sort of similar background then. I'm also a technical kind of writer. I've written a lot of books on media production for O'Reilly Media and Course Technology, the textbook company. And then now I'm just doing stuff on Liberty. I'm trying to make it my full-time everything I do, job and hobby and lifeblood. So,
yeah, it's very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't meet a lot of those people who write technical books and then do this. So, what's been on your mind lately in this day and age?
Well, the thing over the last several days has been Brandon Robb and his detention, whatever we want to call it, by the FBI, Secret Service, and his county police. And the court system, I presume you're basically aware of the facts in that case?
Yeah, but our listeners might not be, so go ahead and lay them out.
Okay, Brandon Robb is a gentleman in Virginia. I get the impression he's in his late 20s. He was a Marine for quite some years, served in both Iraq and Afghanistan, apparently with some distinction.
Yeah, decorated Marine.
Say again?
Decorated Marine.
Yeah.
I only add that because I'm like, you know, if they'd go after a decorated Marine, they'd go after someone like me who doesn't believe in the military, you know?
Right, exactly. So Brandon wrote a bunch of articles on a site called Don't Tread on Me. I've read them. They were, you know, pretty good. I can quibble about small points, but the young man is thinking and writing fairly well. So he did that, and evidently he had a Facebook page and posted a bunch of, you know, things up on Facebook, like a lot of young people do, posted up some lyrics to a song, something he was thinking about that moment. And some of them, okay, they were a little flamboyant, shall we say.
So you said on your post, on your Lou Rockwell article, I had seen his posts, but you said that they are lyrics to a song called Bring Me Down by a band called Swollen Members. Is everything he put lyrics to a song?
Yeah, it looks to be. The worst line on his Facebook page was along the lines of sharpen up the axe, I'm ready to sever heads, which, you know, is pretty gruesome, but it was apparently the lyrics to a song, and it was always meant to be figurative, not literal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so evidently, you know, Facebook, which has been doing monitoring of everything for the state, they somehow flagged it, and the multi-jurisdictional band of armed men descended upon Brandon, and they took him away in handcuffs. But they didn't take him to jail. They took him to a mental facility and had him committed against his will to this psychiatric facility. Then, just this morning or sometime yesterday, they moved him from where he was to someplace a three-hour drive further, presumably so that all the people who are gathering outside of the hospital who knew him and his lawyers and so on would be further away. That's the situation as it stands, so far as I know, right now.
Yeah, I thought that there was going to be a... I heard an interview on Friday with his mother, or Saturday, and she said that there was going to be a hearing on Monday. And she thought... She sounded like she thought it was going to be a criminal hearing, and I was thinking it was going to be a 5150 hearing. Do you know what it was and if it happened?
It was a mental competency hearing of some type. I don't know if that's the proper term. It did occur Monday at the hospital. Brandon had lawyers there from the Rutherford Institute, and they made the arguments you would expect, and the judge said, yeah, tough, he stays for up to 30 days.
And you contend that you think part of the reason for this is to take away his legal right to own a gun?
You know, I don't really know. I suppose that's definitely a possibility, although he said he didn't own any.
There's a picture of him on Facebook posing with a rifle. It's the obligatory "I got a rifle" photo, which many people, including me, have posted of themselves.
Right. As if I'm not mistaken, it's a quite old rifle too. It's not like an AR-15 or something.
I didn't look that closely. I clicked on his page and then went, I don't want to be seen clicking on his page. Which leads to, which leads to the title of your article. It's official. Facebook is the Department of Pre-Crime.
Yeah, it really is. Like I say, it's been known, not reported, but known, that Facebook has just, given access to the state and has been helping the state monitor, pretty much their whole system. For bad guys, whatever that means.
And it doesn't matter if you have everything privated. They can see it anyway, right?
No. They take everything. It's just like using, Gmail or something. Gmail doesn't just take and use everything you send. They save all the drafts when you're typing and then you change your mind. No. If it's been autosaved, they got it. They keep it. They use it.
Do you use Facebook or Gmail?
No, I have an old Gmail account that I sometimes use, for one particular use, just because it's sitting around and I haven't gotten around to change it yet. But I don't use Facebook, and I wouldn't use Gmail for anything of any importance.
So, Brandon, this Marine who got taken away to a mental hospital for posting lyrics to a hip-hop song, and that really, that's news to me. I've been following this since it came out, and it's kind of shocking to me, and I wonder if they knew they were lyrics to a song, if they still would have taken them away. Maybe not. I think that the powers that be, especially, I've seen like 1,000 posts as severe as what he's written by people on Facebook and elsewhere, and the people never been taken away. I think part of it may have to do with the fact that he is ex-military, because, the DHS sent out that report saying, keep an eye on soldiers coming back from the military. I think they were like, the guy that supposedly blew up the federal building was one, so we have to watch all of them. But I think it's also...
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's a quite legitimate theory. I wouldn't be surprised.
Legitimate that I'm thinking that's what they're thinking, not legitimate that that's how they're acting, right? To be clear.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I think that's a fair speculation on your part.
Yeah.
But the other thing, it could very well be that they just simply set up this system and started pumping out, whatever alerts this system pumps out automatically. And the local, gun for hires saw it and said, well, we got to jump on this, and let's call them, and let's just go because the system's in place, and it lets us do this, and let's go do it because, you know, we got this tool. Let's use it. You know, it could be something as stupid as that, because once people who are, how shall I say, of a thuggish mind, once they do something, they cannot change because it makes them look weak. So once they start, they got to see it through because they started it.
Yeah. Do you think it was a conscious attempt the chilling effect? You know, do you think it's a conscious effect? I mean, they can't possibly round up everybody who says anything feisty. Do you think it was a architected attempt to do it to one person that would get a lot of attention to make other people go, oh, I better just go be quiet and sit in the corner?
Well, that could be. I don't have enough information to make that guess, but that would be on my list of, you know, 5 or 6 guesses.
Yeah. Talk about the idea of pre-crime and the history of it and movies about it and how people don't see it as a bad thing who might hate movies about it, hate the idea of it in a movie.
Yeah. It really works to sell it. It just works on people being pathologically and continually afraid. We really have an epidemic of fear, especially in the United States right now. You know, I'm probably older than most of your listeners, and I remember the 60s, and I remember the 70s, and I remember all the stuff that we did, kids playing in the street, hitchhiking to school, stuff like that, we did all the time.
How old are you? Can I ask?
I'm in my middle 50s.
I'm 48. I'm older than a lot of youngsters too.
All right. Yeah. So you remember some
I remember
of
the
this.
Cold War. I remember my brother taking a 22 rifle on the bus to school for his Boy Scout shooting class after school and keeping it in his locker.
Yeah, people did things like that all the time, and everyone wasn't freaked out and scared to death. And the truth is that the incidents of violent crime and kidnapping and everything else are way down from then till now. All of that stuff, it's much safer now than it was then, but people are terrified out of their socks for everything. And as long as they are so afraid and so continually afraid, you can sell this kind of pre-crime crap.
Well,
it's
big business to keep people afraid. I mean, you remember duck and cover drills during, you know, the Cold War when you were a kid, I'm sure.
Yes, I do. Hide under the desk.
You know, and now the Russians are just, a source of mail order brides and cheap rifles.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, humans, just by our structure, we over-respond to fear. It's actually something like a 2-to-1 or more, the way we over-respond to fear. So if you want to manipulate people, the number one thing to do is make them afraid, and then you can work them.
Yeah. So what do you think are the ongoing ramifications of this Brandon Robb situation? Do you think it's a milestone in tyranny or just a dot on a continuum? What do you think people should do in response to it?
I'm not sure of its place yet. That kind of remains to be seen. My guess is that it's the first of many, but I don't, you know, it's really hard to guess. It's certainly bad and it's certainly big. What people need to do is to take internet privacy seriously. When you use Google, when you use Facebook or any of the other free services, you are not their client. You are not their customer. Their customer is the person who gives them money, and that is not you.
I'm actually switching. I'm actually switching on my VPN before I and logging out of Google right now before I go to search the lyrics of this song to confirm that, yes, they are lyrics to a song. How did you know they were lyrics to a song?
Somebody, one of his friends posted a note to that effect.
I kind of want to alter the Wikipedia. I kind of want to add that to the Wikipedia page for that band and use your article as the citation.
Sure. Please. Where were we? Ask a question again. We got sideways.
What are you doing? I guess I can't really say what should people do. I should say what do you do? Have you altered your first of all, I want to state, you know, I'm not a violent person. I own some guns. I don't like the government, but I don't want to start chopping heads off. I wouldn't post the lyrics to this song. It looks kind of dumb lyrics to me, but you know, I'm probably in the not on the short list of people they'd watch and go, eh, but probably on the long, long, long list, which now includes somewhere between, you know, 1 million and 6 billion people, probably. How are you altering your day-to-day anything in response to this?
Well, I was already doing all the things required for that before time. You know, I'm in the privacy business. So I get a lot of warnings on all this stuff before it hits. So I was aware of this going on before they claimed its first victim. So it hasn't changed what I do, but boy, I sure hope it changes what other people do.
What's your what's the URL for your company, and what services do you offer, and what kind of prices do they cost?
Okay, it's cryptohippie.com, CryptoHippie, just the way it sounds. We run an anonymity network. The front door, we make connections to our front door with a VPN, fairly standard sort of, you know, good encryption VPN, and then we do a lot of other things. We have a jurisdictionally aware network, so that wherever you're coming from, you will come out somewhere far, far away from our back door. We have at least 2 hops in our system. We have run our own DNS server. All the traffic inside is completely separated from IP addresses. We use crypto tokens rather than IP addresses internally. What else? Lots of fancy crypto stuff inside. I won't try to describe all that. We have web surfing, obviously, but we have an email server that, you know, does all the fancy stuff on the inside. We have protection for iPhone, iPad, and Androids. We will be turning on a VoIP internally in the next month or two, because Skype has really gotten bad since Microsoft bought them, so we have to do something. So we'll be turning that on and a lot of other little things, an encrypted internal chat server and things like that.
Cool. What's it cost?
$275 a year, $275.
Sounds like a good deal for that much privacy.
It's a real good system. It really is.
Yeah. Do you, are the physical servers located in different locations around the world?
Yeah, we have them in a whole lot of other places, just not in the U.S. or U.K.
Because those get shut down, VPNs in the U.S. and the U.K. get shut down a lot. Is that the reason?
Well, just because they're horrible privacy locations and they could be shut down or ripped off the wall. And, you know, we just don't want to play in the worst places.
All right. So tell me a little bit about your writing for LouRockwell.com and how did that come to be, how long you've been doing it, and what do you tend to write about?
I've been doing it, I think, for a number of years. Lou and I kind of run in the same circles, although I've never actually met him. A lot of our friends are the same guys, Doug Casey, those sorts of people. I know a lot of the people from an old show that Doug used to run every year called the Eris Society. That's where I actually met a lot of these people. There's connections between Lou and I, and every now and then when I have an article that I think is important, I'll send it over and he'll post it. There's no real formality in it.
Okay. You met him in person?
No, never have.
What do you think about the controversy about the Ron Paul racist newsletters? I mean, I know that Lou Rockwell didn't have anything to do with it and he's been blamed for it. I'm just kind of riffing off that subject. What do you think about that and what do you know about it?
You're referring to the old newsletters that had some rather unpleasant stuff in them?
Yeah. That is taken out of context and painted on billboards to denigrate Ron Paul.
Yeah. You know, I really haven't read the originals myself. I can tell you that I used to go to a conference every year with Ron Paul, and I never really knew him, but he's a polite, respectful, nice man. And even, you know, even if he had some stupid opinions in the 80s, well, okay, fine. He's never done anything bad to anybody that I know of, and you know, at some point there's a statute of limitations. A lot of us have said stupid things and had stupid opinions at some point. And if you correct them and move on, you know, there should be a statute of limitations and where you let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't him. It was someone around him. You know, people like to paint well-known people by who their fans are. You know, I mean, if you want to do that, you could say the Democrats are all racist because the KKK were Democrats, and you could say that environmentalists and fans of Al Gore want to blow things up because the only book the Unabomber had in his little shack was Al Gore's book about global warming.
Right. You know, that's guilt by association, and these are just professional manipulators who do that kind of stuff. You know, as soon as you see somebody doing that and they're wearing a nice suit and they're on some kind of television show, that's their job. And their job is to get their fingers in your head and screw with you and make you do what they want you to do.
Yep. So tell me about your new book.
Oh, well, I actually have a bunch of things that I'm working on. I'm actually going to do one of these days, a series of historical novels. They'll be pretty interesting. I'm not really prepared to talk about that one yet. The novel that I wrote that your listeners may know is called The Logic of Wayfaring Men, and it really was a lot of fun, and interestingly, it really is what ran directly to Crypto Hippie. The novel was a story of essentially computer business people and their friends who created a private market on the internet, and it just grows and grows and grows, and you know, problems ensue. So the cypherpunks and the, what they used to call them, the digerati, or was it the clued-in digerati? One reviewer said, you know, really liked the book. So I'll tell you how it ran into Crypto Hippie. When I first published that book, I published it anonymously. It was in the earlier days of the Patriot Act, and I just had personal situations that I didn't know if I was really ready, for other people's sake, not my own, to have this thing become popular and to have to, you know, face public scrutiny for this book. So for mostly other people in my family's sake, I did it anonymously. And I was hanging out in one particular kind of underground cyber hangout, and there was one gentleman there who I really became friends with. I really liked the guy. We talked frequently, and I really liked him. And one day he says to me, he says, "You're the guy, aren't you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You wrote that book, didn't you?" And I said, "Why do you think so?" And he told me why, and I said, "Well, I knew I could trust this guy." I said, "Yeah, I did." And he says, you know what, we need to get together. And I was living in Europe at the point at that time, and he was living there not too far away. And we actually got together and took a five-day road trip across Europe and discussed everything under the sun. And we got done. He's a highly, highly skilled computer guy. And he said, look, we need to do this. This is what I want to build. It needs to be done because there has to be somewhere on the internet that really is protected the right way and that freedom has to exist somewhere. And I said, yes, I agree. He says, I can build this. I said, good. And he says, I can't do it myself. I want you to help me. And I thought about it for a second and I thought, well, yeah, I got to do it. I said, yes. And that became Crypto Hippie.
Cool.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
So while you were chatting, I was multitasking and updating the Wikipedia page for the band Swollen Members, adding a section called Brendan Robb Controversy. And I did it correctly with all the Wikipedia citations and followed all the rules and added a section that says, on August 16, 2012, decorated U.S. Marine Brendan Robb was arrested and taken to a mental hospital in Virginia for Facebook posts that included lyrics from the Swollen Members song Bring Me Down. And I put the citation linking an article by Paul Rosenberg. It's official. Facebook is the Department of Pre-Crime on Lou Rockwell. So let's see how long that stays up before it gets taken down. I mean, I think it's germane to the subject of a, you know, kind of pop culture covered event or culture, you know, in the paper, a lot of papers event about a band. So I don't think Wikipedians should take it down. And I wouldn't think the band would want to take it down because I think a band who's a badass, you know, we're a tough motherfucker hip hop band, even if they are from Canada, which, you know, I would think that they would consider it a feather in their hat that their song got somebody put in a mental hospital. But we'll see, you know.
Actually, that's pretty funny. I'll be interested to see, you know, what they have to say about it, whether they brag or not.
Well, bookmark that page or put it on your Wikipedia watch list and let's see. Yeah.
I'm telling you, I like the idea for a badass, you know, rap guys to say, you know, look what our music did.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mention the FBI. I just said he was arrested and taken to a mental institution. You know, the FBI thing might scare him, but hey, right. You know, I mean, every badass rock band I've ever seen in my life, you know, half of them had lyrics about being crazy and being like, you know, the man wants to keep me down and they're out to get me and just because you're paranoid. And, you know, I mean, every Ozzy Osbourne back in the day would have been happy if someone, I mean, he would have been happy for his fan going to a mental hospital, but he would have considered it a badge of honor, you know?
Definitely.
Most hip hop groups would, most punk rock groups would. So good. There they are. Yeah, I was thinking about that movie, that pre-crime movie. What was it called? Minority Report. Did you see that?
That's right.
Or read the book?
I did see it actually. And I don't see a whole lot of movies, but I did see that one.
Yeah. And I would imagine that a lot of people who saw that movie and loved it and thought, boy, pre-crime is horrible. I hope that never happens. That's fascist. I bet there's a lot of people who saw that movie and thought that, who would read about Brendan Robb being taken away and think, good, the government's protecting me from these evil people.
Well, you know, what happens is that when they see it in real life, they look desperately and very, very quickly to find a reason why it's okay. And the real reason they do that is because they see a choice coming just about to hit them between the eyes of being a hero and telling and saying this is evil and I stand against it, or being a coward and saying, well, I haven't the guts to stand against it. So as soon as they see that choice approaching, they find a reason to avoid it. And they say, well, you know, I mean, come on, look at all the stupid things he posted. Well, you know, well, of course. And they avoid this choice between being a hero and a coward.
You know, the thing is, I'm still wondering, like, why this guy got singled out and what's next. And, I mean, I got an ad on Facebook this week. Oh, by the way, I posted a link to your Lou Rockwell article on Facebook about how Facebook is the new face of Department of Pre-Crime. At the beginning of this, I mean, I multitask. I'm doing eight other things. I'm listening to you, and I'm interested, but I'm doing. I can't sit still. I'm doing other things. So, I posted it on Facebook, and several of my friends shared it. And on Facebook, you know, you can get a little alert when someone shares it. And I clicked on the see who shared this, and it was two of my friends' names. And I went, and then I went to the page where it shows all the people that shared it, and it said, "Let me see what it said." It was like censored somehow. It was weird.
Oh my!
It was. It said, like, no visible shares, which is weird because they're my friends and they're in my network. It should be visible. But, and I've never gotten this message on Facebook before, no visible shares.
So, oh, my. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the central scrutinizer's working overtime there.
Oh, you know, they, when we, the important thing about this is to get this guy, you know, a day or 2 days after making a post, you have to have an infrastructure in place. And so, you know, there is definitely a pre-crime infrastructure in place at Facebook, including notification and communication with law enforcement agencies. They're not going to give that up. They're not going to close that down.
What do you mean? Oh, they're not going to stop. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, I think at this point, even if for some unknown, you know, this wouldn't happen, but even if, like, let's say, Congress elected about, you know, 500 Ron Pauls, which wouldn't happen. And I'm not a, I'm an anarchist. I don't vote. I don't believe in politics. But let's say if, you know, Congress overwhelmingly decided to rescind the Patriot Act and stop the funding to the central scrutinizer building that the NSA is making in Utah to, you know, put every communication ever on a hard drive so it can be decrypted later when they come up with the technology for it. Even if Congress outlawed that and the president outlawed that and they quit funding it, it wouldn't stop, you know?
No.
I mean, there's that thing, going back to movies, there's that thing in the movie Independence Day. You ever seen that?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's another, you know, there's a thing in there where they're like, they're at Area 51 looking at the body of the alien and, you know, he's like, how do you pay for this? You know, and it's like, it's a U.S. congressman or general or something saying, how do you pay for this? I've never heard of this. And he's like, well, you remember that report about the Pentagon paying $800 for a screwdriver? Yeah, right. That's how we funded this.
Yeah, the government is so out of control. Nobody really knows what's going on. I mean, there's too many gigantic agencies, too many individuals doing all sorts of monkey business. You know, the government is not 500 or 600 people in Washington. It's a number of million people all over the place.
Yeah, and it's people who are just following orders and just paying for their family, you know, I got to feed my family, you know, and
right.
they can make more money with better benefits there than they can in the private sector. So even if they don't all believe in it, like I know a guy, I used to be in this band called Bomb back, back in the 80s and 90s that was signed to Warner Brothers and toured Europe and toured America and then broke up. I'd hate to be in a band called Bomb now. I can't imagine traveling
right.
with like Anvil Road cases that say Bomb on them, taking them on an airplane, which we used to do all the time. What's in the case? Ah, well, we forget where we put it, officer, so we marked it. We actually told a cop that one time when he searched our car or van. But, but you know, I can't imagine like trying to do that in today's climate.
No, that would not be... advisable.
Yeah, which is too bad. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, oh, but anyway, I had a fan of that band back then who like actually came to see us at our farewell show and he was like, you know, 20 and I had to talk the bar into letting him in and making sure I had to make sure he didn't drink and, you know, he'd like traveled from Texas to California to see our final show. He was such a big fan and, you know, we kept in touch, then we lost in touch and he got in touch with me recently on Facebook and I was like, what are you up to? And he's like, oh, I got a great job, man. I'm working for the TSA. And I was like, fuck you. You know, I tried to explain to him why that was evil. And he's like, yeah, I know. I don't like feeling up grandma and little kids either. And I have bad dreams about it. But you know, I'm just doing it till I can like pay off my student loans and get settled and start my own business. And like, I can't not do it. I'm locked into it, you know? And there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of people who, you know, a lot of people believe it, but even the people that don't believe it need to do it, they feel, you know, they're just following orders.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of the people in government, that's why I dislike some of the reflexive statements that are made by libertarians and anarchists about, you know, hey, if you are a member of the state in any way, you're irreparably evil and you need to, you know, whatever. People are very complex, and there's guys who get into those positions out of some sort of desperation or stupidity or both. You know, we all have done stupid things and done things out of a position of weakness, weaker than, or really thought we were weaker than we were. And, you know, okay, fine. So a guy does something stupid. The important thing is he gets out of there before it destroys him. Because when you live with that set of incentives in front of you every day, it will corrupt you. And that's really the problem.
What do you think life's going to be like when you're old?
Oh, boy. You know,
better or worse?
Well, I'm an optimist, so I tend to say better. But we have a real rough set of changes in front of us right now. These next few years could be really bad. I'm expecting good things long-term and a lot of unpleasantness before then. The system that we're in now is gigantic. It will change. It is falling like the Roman Empire fell. But, you know, it took the Roman Empire a long time to fall. It was doomed in the middle 200s, it was doomed. And it didn't really go down to the middle 400s. So I don't think it'll be anywhere near as long this time for a variety of reasons. But there's a lot of waste and a lot of things collapsing coming. And it could just, you know, unstable structures are funny. They can, you know, lean left, lean right, fall straight. They could go all sorts of directions. And I can't tell exactly what's going to collapse first and how.
What do you like to do for kicks?
Oh, good question. Well, hang out with friends. Honestly, I like, you know, just some quiet time. I'm so busy with so many things going on. I like quiet time just to sit and read or to, you know, go out. I'm not really, you know, a club guy. Never really was. I mean, I was 18. I really didn't like clubs.
I didn't like clubs when I was playing in clubs, but, you know, it's not as crowded on stage, so I'd put up with it.
You know, I've actually done that a few times, and it was kind of fun. So, you know, that's a good question. I'm usually so busy all the time that I don't really know. I'm mostly spending time with friends. You know, I have to take a lot of business trips. I took one recently. I was in Central Europe for a while, but I got a couple days where I hopped over to another place and spent a couple days with an old friend. That was really nice. Things like that.
Cool. Do you know much about mesh networking?
I don't know all the particulars, but I know a bit about it, and I think it's a good thing to do. You know, it's quite possible that the internet is going to be more and more and more controlled. I mean, it's already just about, you know, the worldwide surveillance system, and it's getting worse, and it may get a lot worse, and we're going to need to do things like mesh networks and the old FidoNet and long-range Wi-Fi and packet radio and things like
that.
Did
you say FidoNet? Wow. I actually interviewed... Do you know who the real Plato is?
No, I don't, although I've seen the name.
Yeah, he's a young, really slick, white hat hacker kind of guy. Interviewed him last week, and I brought FidoNet up, and he was like, "What's that?" You know, like, "What are you talking about, Grandpa?" I actually know Tom Jennings, the guy who invented FidoNet.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was I lived in San Francisco for 16 years, and he was involved... I was at a punk rock, the band Bomb I was in. He was a fan of Bomb, and he put out, he had a magazine called Homocore, and they put out a compilation called JD's Greatest Hits. and it had a bomb song on it. And that's how I knew him. And he lives in L.A., and then I lived in L.A. later, and I used to run into him at art galleries and things like that. So, yeah, Tom Jennings, man. Wow, FidoNet. You want to explain FidoNet, the archaic technology FidoNet, and how it could be revitalized if things got hard to use, and how it would be better?
Well, it was one of the early sort of internet sort of technologies. And, you know, it's just a method for transferring files, for transferring data from place to place. But it doesn't have to be synchronous. It doesn't have to be in real time. You can just send a bunch of stuff and it'll be there when you're ready, hopefully.
It was a BBS service thing before the World Wide Web.
It actually was, yeah. Yeah, and it was just a, you know, a system, a protocol of sending stuff, but it could work well. You know, the type of system we'll have if the internet gets totally owned by the state, we'll have lower throughput and lower bandwidth. So we're going to have to send things in batches, and you know, you'll get your morning batch or your afternoon batch of emails and data from people, and send it back and forth that way.
I kind of like that. I kind of like that. It would actually give me time to live life a little more.
Yeah, you know, it's real easy to stay glued to your screen. It can be a problem.
It'd be kind of like, you know, the mailman comes and he has your mail for the day.
Right. Kind of a halfway back to the old days.
Yeah. FidoNet. I'm really impressed that you brought that up, man. Tom Jennings. Yeah. Yep. Yep. He's an old gray-haired punk rocker with lots of tattoos.
Okay. God bless.
So what else, sir?
Oh, let's see.
You said you wanted to talk about online security, free and otherwise. So let's expand on that a little bit.
Okay. One of the things that I tell people is, you know, do something. Whatever you're going to do, you got to do something, because the internet is, you know, worldwide surveillance. That's just what it's become. And, you know, they started working on this in the early 90s, you understand. I've got copies of memos, declassified, of National Security Council and boss of the CIA and the NSA and everybody else concerned about encryption.
You know, I actually wrote in my first novel in the year 2000, email, and I was the character was joking and being kind of paranoid, and he was a guy who didn't use the internet, and I used the internet, but my character, kind of based on me, didn't. And he said, in the year 2000, and I said this first in 1998, was, the internet is just a government plot to read everyone's mail without having to steam open envelopes. And I was kind of kidding, but apparently I wasn't, huh?
Well, that's what it has become. Honestly, you know, it got out of hand for them. They did not know what they were getting into. It was a mistake. The internet actually
They could have shut it down to the public or regulated it in, like, 1994. It was small enough that they could have done that without disrupting everything everyone's doing and causing too many waves, but they didn't.
Exactly.
And now it's too late.
Right, now it's too late. But, you know, they could have done it a lot of times. It got out of control for them. They didn't know what they were doing. So, oddly enough, the internet actually begins with Sputnik, which is really... really digging in the archives.
Which, to those don't know, was a Russian satellite in the late 50s, the first thing in space, and it just went ping, ping,
right,
ping.
But it scared the hell out of the U.S. establishment, because the Russians had beat us to space, and it was considered a very serious thing.
All of a sudden, schools, you know, I was born in 64. I was going to school in 69. And by then, it was well entrenched of, like, you will learn mathematics. You will learn science. You will excel, you know.
Right. So what happened after Sputnik is that the U.S. establishment got scared. And rather than doing the usual thing of taking, you know, people for programs out of the very best universities and the very best programs recommended by Professor So-and-so, they actually found the actual smart guys.
The Nazi scientists?
Right. Well, not only them. That was a little earlier. but they took the actual smart guys wherever they could find them and let them play. And that's, you know, DARPA and ARPA and all these various groups. People were brought into those groups not because they had the right initials after their name, but because they could actually do the stuff.
And yeah, like the people working with Douglas Engelbart and people like that at MIT and Berkeley. And a lot of people were actually, you know, some of the best scientists, young people, got into that because they were avoiding the Vietnam War. You could avoid being drafted if you were a smart enough scientist and would go work in the science department for the war.
Right, that's true. So what happened is you had this group of smart guys who are actually allowed to be smart guys and weren't, you know, ridiculed for it or treated badly for it, who got to do things. And that's pretty much the group of guys who came up with a lot of things, including what became later the internet. And it got out of control. They didn't realize what they were getting into. And all of a sudden, here's this thing sprouting up everywhere. And right at the same time, I guess it's fortunate for us, Bill was playing around with Monica in the back room. And they were too busy with that stuff to pay attention to this thing that was eating them alive.
I mean, there's a lot of hippie ideology and philosophy and spirituality in the construction of the internet. I mean, the idea of a hyperlink, I think someone had to take LSD to come up with that. I really do.
Yeah, well, it could be. I don't really know, but yes, that is exactly the culture.
Yeah, because it's like a, you know, psychedelic, concentric, parenthetical, everything's connected, man. Let's just connect it.
Right. It's actually more along the lines of the early hippies who were really interested in they used to call the drugs they took entheogens, which means, you know, God inside. They were interested in consciousness and in developing consciousness and how drugs altered consciousness in ways that pointed out interesting things.
Well, the whole Earth catalog had a lot on computing. Did you ever read that?
Boy, not for a long, long time.
And Stuart Brand, who started that, actually started The Well, which was one of the very first, you know, online pay services way before the web.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, there was that group of people, and again, this was before the, you know, the later hippies who were political types.
When I say the whole Earth catalog had a lot about computers in it, and you say not for a long time, I don't even know if it's published anymore. I'm talking about copies of it from 1969 and 70 that I found in my garage that belonged to my sisters, older sisters.
Right. Yeah, I think it's still in print. I could be mistaken.
I wouldn't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember copies from the 70s, yeah.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
So for the last segment, let's talk a little about the history of the state and then close with solutions. So,
okay.
The state, it exists. Where did it come from?
It actually began, well, it's conquest. It's geostationary conquest is essentially what it is. And it began with thugs, primarily, it seems to have been hunters overrunning some of the very first farmers. It actually began in the era of 6,000, maybe 400 BC.
Okay.
What happened was, and I'm going to have to kind of condense here, you know, the Ice Age ended at roughly 8,000, 9,000 BC. At that point is really where human history begins, at least as far as, you know, anything we can really put any details to. Before then was 90,000 years of ice and snow. Not a whole lot of artifacts survived that, and no written records that I'm aware of ever survived that. So we're kind of starting afresh at 8,000 or 9,000 BC. With a few little things we get from the time before then. What happened in the West, for sure, was that there was a group of farmers, the very first farmers that we know of, that came down out of what is now Armenia after the Ice Age. And they tended to move from place to place every few years, just, you know, up the stream and so on, because they didn't know crop rotation. And so when a field was not producing so much, they moved down the road or down the stream, really, to the next one. It wasn't any problem because there were only maybe about 5 million people on the whole planet at the time and something 20 billion tillable acres, something like that. So they moved from place to place until they got to the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, which flooded every year and replenished the soil. And then they could stay. And they stayed in this spot and began to get rich, essentially. They were doing quite well farming before then, but when they got there, they were stationary and they could build permanent storerooms. They could get larger collections of people together, which was really important for, let's say, the young man or woman with musical talent. And they could find somebody who could play and sing along with them, whereas if they were moving along the stream, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, or maybe they would once a year. It seems that they would meet in central locations once a year. But anyhow, as they're in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley and the soil is refreshed every year and they can stay put, they get rich. And this brings in the surrounding hunters who want to steal their stuff. And that's really when states begin to form. The very first ones were raiding parties, and then the raiders finally got a brain in their heads and realized, well, gee, we can rip off these people, you know, once, and then they move away, and besides, they fight back. Or we can just set up a deal where we take just about, you know, maybe a fifth of what they have all the time and generally leave them alone. And that seems to be the very first sort of rulership. It wouldn't be a state that we'd call it, but it was in central Mesopotamia, 6200, 6400 BC, something like that. The real moment when a state, as we would recognize it, forms is in about 5400 BC at a city in southern Mesopotamia called Eridu, E-R-I-D-U. And that's really when the system really kind of came together, where people were trained to give to the state as a duty rather than just thugs taking their stuff. It was a real important adaptation, because if you just got thugs stealing guys' stuff, it's very expensive to run that kind of operation. The farmers, you know, eventually hit you with a shovel, or, you know, they hide their grain before you can get there, and it's just, you know, it's not a stable operation. But if you can have what in those days they had a priest class, or now we have an intelligentsia sort of class, that convinces people that it's their righteous duty to support the state or whatever they call it in their time, then it's a going economic enterprise.
How does that lead to today?
Well, it leads in a direct line, actually. 5400 BC at Eridu, you had all the... We had, you know, all of the basic pieces of a state. By about 3000 BC, I mean, they had everything. They had a very clear intellectual class that did the state's bidding. They had tax collectors. They had myths that made tax collecting the righteous duty of all citizens. They had really a surveillance state in those days.
Where and when are you talking?
This is the Sumerian Empire from roughly 3000 to 2000 BC through pretty much all of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley.
I've heard it said that Jericho was the first real state. Is that true?
Well, there are structures from Jericho from 8,000-9,000 BC while the ice was still present or receding. So I suppose it's fair to say that it may be the oldest city, but it was just the people in that area were pretty much hunter-gatherers, and they were gathering dates. They seemed to survive that way. But there were actual buildings in Jericho, so that's probably not a completely unfair statement.
Do you see any difference between the state and the government?
No, that's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, those are just kind of very fine distinctions, and you have to define your terms very carefully to use them well. So, no, and for a practical matter, I don't see any difference.
Do you know a podcaster named Ben Stone? He does a podcast called The Bad Quaker.
No, I saw the name not long ago, The Bad Quaker, but that's all I know.
It's amazing. I recommend it to anybody. It's really brilliant, really unique take on stuff, and like really good audio quality, and he has a great voice, very soothing. You know, even when he's talking about things that worry me, it soothes me. He has an interesting take on it that I like and have been using to look at the world, is that the government and the state are two different dependent things. The government is the laws and the buildings and the badges and the guns and the cops and the judges and the politicians. And the state is the collective hallucination that allows it to continue.
Oh, okay. I see what he's saying.
In other words, the state could cease to exist and the government would exist for a couple days or weeks after.
Right.
You know, kind of like on King of the Hill, there's a guy who's kind of crazy and Hank Hill's telling his son, Bobby, don't hang out with that man. I could tell you his future without a crystal ball. He's going to live with his mother until she dies and probably a few weeks afterwards. So the state could collapse and there'd still be people showing up at work in the government for a few weeks until the checks bounced, you know?
Right. It's what I say. It's a bit, essentially the same thing in a different way. I say the state's in their heads. And that's, you know, the distinction. The government really is, without the state, you're right, it falls apart in whatever, weeks, months, it's over. It's this idea of legitimacy, that it's right for them to order me around, that it's right for me to give them my goods, that it's right for me to do what they say I'm going to do, because it is, that's why. Once we get that out of people's heads, well, government ceases to be a problem in short order. The problem is this pattern in their heads.
Gotcha. So, the state. How does this... Go ahead.
I'll give you a quick story, which was very interesting to me. And it's this, that the Great Plague, it was called the Great Pestilence, now it's called the Black Plague. About 1348 AD, pretty much decimated Europe. And at the end of this, not decimated, killed roughly a third to a half of the whole continent. At the end of this, it left the serfs in a very strong bargaining position because the land was still there. There were enough nobles remaining that there was still somebody to keep most of the titles, but there weren't people to work the fields. So the peasants had a real good bargaining position and could have gotten all sorts of benefits had they wanted them. A few did, most didn't, because leaving their slot, leaving their position, meant they had to leave certain guarantees that the noble had to do this for them. And rather than taking a larger life for themselves, most of them fought to retain their status as serfs, because it was what they knew. The state was in their heads, and they were afraid to do anything on their own. They needed their intellectual partner, their intellectual guide, aka the state, to run their lives. And, you know, the state essentially was, the government was essentially gone, or at least largely gone, but they wanted to keep it because it was still in their heads and they felt absolutely naked and vulnerable without it.
So getting back to the Brandon Robb controversy, okay. You know, when I first heard that happened, I was really worried, and I'm still worried and still think it's very unsettling.
It is.
The thing is, though, I was actually... the first thing I read about it was on Freedom's Phoenix, and they listed, they didn't list his Facebook page. They listed some articles he wrote, and I went and read the articles, and there was nothing in them that would get someone taken away? I mean, they're all like standard, you know, patriot, God, American, God-fearing American, ex-military, support, you know, we got to go back to the Constitution kind of stuff, which, and there was nothing of the word violence in any of it. It seemed like your standard, you know, like, okay, someday you'll get it, you know, kind of like, okay, at least it's better than being a neocon. But, you know, and then I found his Facebook posts and read them and was actually kind of relieved to see that he'd said some violent things, not saying I'm relieved of anything violent. I think he was speaking theoretically and, you know, I don't think he was calling for action. I think he was speaking figuratively, but I was actually kind of relieved to see that there were some words of violence in there, because I was thinking they'd taken him away for the other stuff. And actually the kind of stuff he wrote probably could have gotten someone taken away in some situations before 9/11 and before the Patriot Act, you know,
could be,
you know, if you were publishing that in pamphlets and handing it out in front of the courthouse, you know, in 1985, that probably could have gotten you in rural Virginia, that probably could have gotten you dealt with by the cops in some way. So that was kind of a relief a little bit.
Right. I understand. You know, when I look at all this stuff, the articles that you mentioned, I think they're the same ones I read. I think that's how this guy expresses himself when he's being calm and reasoned and trying to make an intelligent argument. I think Facebook was just what a lot of the young guys do. He was just up there ranting and, you know, BSing with his friends and maybe had a couple of drinks and was, you know, shooting his mouth.
And listening to Canadian hip hop really loud.
Right. You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, because he didn't actually do anything. I mean, come on, how many of us have said stupid things at one point or another when a little lubrication was involved? I mean, you know, almost all of us.
Not me. I'm a saint. I'm a Boy Scout.
Right. Okay. But, you know, you're allowed to be stupid sometimes. As long as you're not hurting anybody, it's no one's damn business.
You know, I was actually recording, I was not recording. I was talking to my podcast partner, Nima Vedati, on the phone one day, and we talked for about an hour, and I was like, God, man, this whole conversation would have made a great podcast. I wish we'd recorded it. And I was kind of like, ugh. And then I was like, maybe we could do a FOIA request and get the NSA's recording of it.
Right. maybe we can get it back from the archive underneath Fort Meade.
You know, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, actually talked about how some of the great early libertarian writers, the early economists in Russia and Germany, actually in Germany, their books were seized by the Nazis and they were driven out of their country. And then the Russians took over that part of Germany and got those books and had them in their archives for a decade or so. And then someone in Russia handed them to, you know, one of their economists, like, look at this, isn't this crazy crap? And one of those economists became an evangelist for Austrian type economics.
No kidding. I wasn't aware of that.
So, you know, I'm wondering if all my podcasts get, you know, droned someday, maybe some future generation will be able to find them from the government archives of the NSA.
Well, if it comes to that, I sure hope so.
Yeah. So how far away do you think we are year-wise from actual free speech being illegal? Like, okay, they took this guy away. They sort of have some, like, reasons that make sense to them for it. Like, oh, he might have done something violent. What about people who never mention swords or chopping off heads or American Revolution and just calmly talk on the internet, you know, on podcasts or radio shows or on blogs, and say things about taxation being unethical and being enforced at the barrel of the gun by the government, and, you know, democracy being 51% tyrannizing 49%, and things like that, that are absolutely not violent. How long do you think we are from that being illegal?
Boy, that's a really good question. That will become illegal when
it's effective.
When the consequences of it becoming illegal are acceptable to the bosses. In other words, when John and Jane Doe are willing to make excuses for it, to give it the benefit of the doubt, to, you know, say, well, we need law and order or whatever it is, or they're afraid, which is the more likely route. As soon as that happens, then making what you're talking about illegal will follow. It's, you know, you got to remember in Nazi Germany, there were people, you know, thought that the law mattered. They didn't think that this was just outright tyranny. They thought, you know, that there were laws and this isn't the German way. This is the way it's done. And they went along with stuff piece by piece by piece by piece by piece. And they were unaware. A lot of them were unaware of parts of it. And it all looked, you know, okay. I mean, you know, look at now. We've got these SWAT teams in every town. And when they go and break doors down and point guns in people's faces and they say, no, no, it was a drug dealer, then most people are pretty happy with that.
They did that yesterday in my town, Casper, Wyoming, a town of 50,000 people. There was a quote-unquote hostage situation at a local hotel. They had pictures on the news of it and the big Bearcat armored tank, you know, and the local police dressed up like National Guard. And, you know, it ended with four of the so-called hostages being released, one of the so-called hostage takers giving himself up, and the other so-called hostage taker allegedly killing himself. And there's no more details. There's no details of, was this a drug warrant? What happened? You know, it's just that. And all the comments on the local paper website are like, good, I'm so glad the government... And the interesting thing was, it was the first day of school, and it was the primary voting day in Wyoming. So, you know, and I'm not saying it was manufactured, but it is, you know, it got in the way of the first day of school. Kids on their first ever day of school saw this on the bus or couldn't get into school because of it, and that was their first lesson, the first day of school.
Yeah. You know, as long as they can do things, you know, well, what's the difference between this team, you know, doing that or, you know, dragging away, you know, a gay guy or dragging away, you know, a crazy libertarian or whatever. It's just what people will accept. It's the same mechanism and it already exists. The question is, what are they able to get away with where people will reliably give them the benefit of the doubt?
Yep. So what do you see as solutions, if any?
There's no solution that I know of in terms of reforming this thing. It's on its path. It's way beyond the point of no return. And it's going to do its thing. And, you know, the system's going to choke itself to death. It's already doing it economically. And it's just, it's going to be a problem. And the solution is to stay the hell out of the way. Don't get caught in its meat grinder. And really, the solution is to build better systems ourselves. Just forget about trying to reform this thing. And what we want, build it ourselves. The real problem is that there are too many guys who know what's right who don't act. They'll talk all day, all night, but they'll never get up and do anything.
And what do you mean by do anything? You're obviously not talking about a violent solution, and we want to clarify that.
Right, of course. I'm talking about, you know, start using digital currency, set up barter networks, start, you know, open up a precious metals dealership, build companies that do the things you want to do. You know, just start doing things rather than sitting around and complaining.
Do you think that using encryption and VPNs will ever become illegal in America?
Boy, I don't think so, because too many corporations use VPNs.
Well, in Syria, you have to have a license to do it, and corporations have a license to do it.
I'm not aware of any requirement for licenses, although, you know.
Syria, man, that, Syria.
Yeah, it may come to that. Right now, the kind of powers that be are really going after the model of separating the internet by nation.
Well, you know, in North Korea, most citizens don't know the internet exists. That's how they've dealt with it there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But they're trying to, you know, go essentially with the telephone model where everything is separated by nations and codes, and they want to have national firewalls. So you have to have some sort of internet passport to use the internet internationally, and then each country can control its own territory, and then they're going to have the effectively driver's licenses to use the internet, and that's the model that they're going, and then they can shut down whatever they want.
And a way that people get around that is by using things like Tor, which was actually invented by the U.S. government to enable people, you know, in countries where the U.S. government's trying to install a puppet to communicate with each other, to have their revolutions or whatever. A lot of liberty people use Tor, and I have a problem with that. I don't know the technology of it, but I have a problem doing with something that is still funded by the State Department.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, Tor has certain nice aspects to it. The problem with Tor is you have to use it well. You have to know what you're doing. You have to properly set up all your programs to use it, and you have to stay current with the you know, security exploits that are coming and going. You have to stay on top of the thing. Otherwise, you lose effectiveness pretty quickly, and you think you're safe, and you're not. Yeah. So, you know, Tor is okay in terms of tech, as far as I know. But you got to use it right, or, you know, just don't. Do something else.
Last question. Are you hopeful for the future?
Yeah, long term, I really am. We're really, one of these days, whether it's 100 years or 1,000 years, we're going to pass from essentially the gray ages of mankind to the luminous ages of mankind. The damage that has been done to us with this insane idea of a state is way deeper than people realize. And at some point, we are going to emerge into better people.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on the Anarchy Gumbo, Paul. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Worms.
Okay.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiend show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.